This is NASCAR driver Tony Breidinger inviting you to make a pit stop at Raising Cane's for my favorite craveable chicken fingers. Turbocharge your order and get it even faster when you order online or with the Raising Cane's app. Raising Cane's chicken fingers, one love. Raising Cane's is not affiliated with NASCAR.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Jones! Bowden!
He's got it! England have won the World Cup by the barest of margins!
Stokes flashes it away through the covers for four, and England have won the match.
Hello and welcome to a special edition of the Analyst Inside Cricket, looking ahead to the World Test Championship final at the Aegeus Bowl. This podcast is in association with LV Insurance, who of course are sponsors of English Test and County Cricket. I'm at the Aegeus Bowl, actually looking out over the green sward in front of me. The Indians are warming up at the far end. It's actually looking a bit damp, I have to say. The covers are on and the clouds are sort of gathering overhead the day before the game, and the forecast is not good. Now, we've got two very interesting people to preview the match with us today. We've got Simon Dool, the former New Zealand fast bowler, who's also a very popular commentator, and Dinesh Kartik, who's sort of almost making his debut as a live commentator. He did a few inserts for Sky during the winter, but this is his first gig as a proper commentator on a big game. He, of course, is still playing the game regularly for Kolkata Knight Riders, amongst others, and has some really interesting things and some insights into the current players. So they're joining us to preview this match. And the first question we had for them, actually, was, have they looked at the unusual rain regulations for this match, with, of course, a sixth day added in case of inclement weather?
I have had a look. I didn't understand a thing, but I asked the question. It was the first question I asked when we arrived yesterday afternoon. And if we need three overs on that day six, we can take three overs.
Right.
And if we need the whole day, we can take the whole day. So no matter what is required on day six, if there is eight overs lost to rain and there's a chance of a result, they can play eight overs on that day number six. So it's as simple as I can put it, basically. Whatever time is lost through the first 5 days can be made up if it rains on day number six.
Yeah, so we could have a really bizarre situation where we get, you know, a short sixth day, and you know, 11 till 12. Well, no, it's 10:30 start.
Is 10:30. It?
So 10:30 to 11:30 or whatever, something like that. Anyway, or as Simon says, we could go right through the whole day. I mean, just looking at the weather forecast, I'm a bit fearful that we might well need that sixth day. I'm just trying to
What radar do you use? What are we talking?
Just one of those weather apps that gives you that day by day. And there's about 80% on all the days of the match apart from Saturday. When they do get on the ground, and if they do in the next 5 or 6 days, who's favourite for this match? I can't quite work it out myself. Who's favourite for the game?
Oh, the country of 1.2 billion, surely. They've got to be favourites.
I disagree. I think New Zealand, the way they've played, I've actually just written a big feature, which, you know, Dooley, you helped me with, about New Zealand. I think New Zealand have become the model for, they've overtaken Australia as the model for how to construct a sporting team. And obviously the All Blacks led the way, but now the Black Caps have followed. And I think the culture of New Zealand sport is what the Australians probably were 20 years ago, when we were all copying their academies and their kind of their overall attitude to sport. The Kiwis' attitude to sport is outstanding. And I think it's your time, you know, like, just as I thought it was England's time to win the 2019 World Cup, and their whole build up, their kind of momentum towards that tournament and the final was almost unstoppable. I feel with New Zealand, it's the same here, actually.
I hope so. The issue is, and the reason I play it down is a little bit tongue-in-cheek, because only the All Blacks play favourites well. Every other New Zealand sporting team plays favourites terribly. So if we're perceived to be favourites, then it just doesn't bode well for us, I don't think. So if we would like to sneak in under the radar.
You're getting better. You're getting better at dealing with the favourites sort of tag on.
Yeah,
you,
we are. We are. That's for sure. And I mean, this is a very good side. And I know you've written that article. I look at this, and to me, this is the best. I think the best equipped New Zealand squad, and I'm not talking just team, that we have ever been able to assemble. And I know there'll be people, we talked a little bit about it in commentary the other day around the 1980s team, the 86 team, but it had two genuine world-class players, some really good players in and around it. But and our 99 side that came here with the likes of Cairns, Astor, Fleming, McMillan, Nash, you know, Vittori, really good side. But I just think I look at the depth and the strength in this side to change six players from Lords going to Edgbaston, and still to win over, arguably not a great England side, but it tells me there's great strength and depth in the side, and they're fairly confident.
Who put the poll up? Was that you? Yozzy's put the poll up?
No, that was me. That was me. Improvising in the back.
What does the poll say? I thought you meant that someone had actually put a poll up.
Can you not see it on your screen?
I can only see poll in progress.
Okay. Actually. Well, at the moment, I mean, our members are quite emphatically going for New Zealand, with a couple going for the draw. India 18%. I mean, India are such a good side, but what about their? I think the issue is, what about their preparation? But do teams need that preparation these days? So often we see teams, you know, they think, oh, they haven't had a great deal of preparation, and they play well almost straight away. Perhaps cricketers are just used to it these days.
Did New Zealand look underprepared at Lords?
No,
and I think that's the key. They were here in Southampton, intra squad games, great facilities, and I think they went to Lords. They didn't look unprepared at all.
I mean, you look at England, they'd had eight rounds of county championship cricket. Some guys had made already 500 runs this year and looked like novices. And yet New Zealand, who hadn't played a single match, apart from a few warm-up stuff, were primed and ready. I think also another thing I like about the Kiwis is that they're not scared to make this like fairly drastic decisions, like suddenly bringing in Devon Conway to open the batting in that first test. So, you know, you've got that stable team, you've got a squad of players, but you're also not afraid to make quite stark decisions and go for someone who you have a hunch with. And obviously it proved a brilliant choice, but that's quite brave, actually. And, you know, that can destabilise a team. So, you know, you need to be kind of stable, but also constantly innovate. And that seems to me what you are doing.
And I think that the brave decision's been made too, gents, with leaving Mitchell Santner out of the squad. They trimmed it to 15. That looks like, to me, the toss-up is between Colin de Grandhomme and Ajaz Patel. Now, if we get a couple of days or 2.5 days of rain, and then we don't get started till maybe Saturday afternoon or Sunday, something like that might change. It might be Colin de Grandhomme, but at the moment it looks like New Zealand will go in with Kyle Jamieson at 7, Tim Southee at 8, Wagner at 9, Ajaz Patel at 10, and Bolt at 11, and just go with their top six batsmen with BJ Watling at 6, and, you know, and try and win it that way, and try and basically bowl India out.
I mean, it probably makes a bit more sense, doesn't it? If it's going to be a shorter game, you know, with weather around in English conditions, de Grandhomme, you probably think more than Patel, which is a shame, actually, because I'd like to see Patel play. You want to see some spin, I think.
Yeah.
The Ajaz Bowl pitch, I mean, you need a decent game, a long game, I think, to get the spinners involved from the matches we've seen there from memory. You know, spinners have had an effect there, not a dramatic effect in the test matches we've seen. But you know, if we'd had the, you know, if this weather had held, then I think definitely you want a spinner in the next few days.
I think what they've done is they've realised there might be a bit of weather on the way as well. So the last 2 days we've been here and it's been boiling hot. It was really hot yesterday. It's been really hot today, and it's been completely uncovered. So they haven't had the covers on at all. I've got moisture in the sort of perimeters in the block, the square, and they've left the pitch completely open. So there's some grass coverage on it, But I'm guessing the last 2 days have really dried it out. So they've expected the rain, and I'm sure the groundsman has got it absolutely spot on as of today and ready to go in 2 days' time because he knew the rain might be coming tomorrow.
Yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? He was talking about having a pitch with pace in it as well. Isn't it? Good pace and bounce. I mean,
well, yeah. Normally does, doesn't it? I mean, it's normally got good carry here, actually. Remember, there was a one-day match, I remember, England played against South Africa about 3 or 4 years ago, and Mark Wood, they needed something like 10 off the last over.
I think it was fewer than that, yours, actually.
Yeah, and Woody bowled a rapid over.
Yeah, do
you remember, and then they lost, South Africa lost. Do you remember also, I remember Chris Tremlett getting a lot of, or maybe it was Stephen Finn getting a lot of bounce here 1 year as well, and the ball really sort of carrying through sort of almost head high. So I think it's a good cricket pitch. It's got something in it for everyone usually. And if it's overcast, it will help the seamers a fair bit. But if it's sunny, it'll be a nice track to bat on. And I think it's one of those pitches actually where you're never entirely in. You know, you don't get double hundreds here, do you? I don't think anyone has made a double hundred here from memory. But you get some good 80s and 90s and... the bowlers are always sort of got a bit of a chance.
Well, someone called Zach Crawley made a double hundred there last year.
I wasn't there, so I can't remember. The trouble is, you watch all these games on telly now, and you can't distinguish one ground from another.
Mind you, that was the last run he scored, I think, wasn't it?
He hasn't made 67 since that day. I don't think has he in total.
What did he make of England, Simon?
Look, I was disappointed. I was really disappointed at Lords. I thought that they needed to go for it. I mean, if you are asking a young side, now I understand that there's no Butler, there's no Stokes, Chris Wokes perhaps. I mean, I understand all that. But what are you telling these young guys when you're saying we're not going to go for this total? If they had said to Zach Crawley, Sibley, you know, Joe Root himself, to Dan Lawrence and to Ollie Pope, boys, we're going to go for it. And listen, Stuart, Ollie, Mark Wood, Jimmy, you might have to block some overs out at the back end if we get out. And that's how we're going to play. And I think that England fans in the ground in particular and around the country would have forgiven them had they lost that test, if they'd gone for it, because crowds weren't allowed back. You know, I mean, it's the first time we had 6,000 at the ground. Crowds were finally being allowed back. They made some amazing noise. They put up with a day of rain. If England had gone for it and lost, I think there would have been full forgiveness from the England fans.
Definitely.
Me, really, really disappointing. And then they were blown away at Edgbaston. And I thought they were, you could also turn around though and say, Joe Root takes the catch to dismiss Will Young. And the Zach Crawley thing is given out, completely different game.
Mm. Yeah, England's catching is an issue as well. And we saw it last time in New Zealand. I mean, Ben Stokes, everyone thinks is a great catcher of the ball. He does take some great catches, but he also drops a few. And of course, he dropped BJ Watling when he made 31. And something like 9.5 hours later, he made it to 200. I mean, it was an extraordinary innings. It was, I think, about 11 hours and 7 minutes in all.
Yeah.
Just to pick up on what Dooley was saying there about England, a couple of things. One, if they had gone for it and they hadn't, they'd sort of come a cropper. Actually, the experience, the lower order players like Bracey or anyone else down the order, staying in and playing for a draw, that would have been a great thing to achieve. You remember the drama that, you know, this is an extreme example, but, you know, Panesar and Anderson holding out against Australia at Cardiff, you know, that gives the nation a massive uplift, even though they were second best on that game, you know, just to kind of put them under pressure. And I did say this at the time, Simon, didn't I, that on that podcast straight after that first Lord's test, you know, they didn't learn anything from those players and they could have learned something. They could have learned, are they able to up the tempo and chase a score, or are they able to shut up shop?
Yeah.
And resist. So that's one thing. Secondly, I actually had a day with Jason Roy yesterday filming for our World Cup documentary, and he was astonished that England didn't go for it at Lord's. And of course, he would say that, wouldn't he? Because that England one day side are so positive in everything they do, and he's the kind of fire starter in a way. So he would inevitably say, yeah, of course we're going to go for it. But he just thought it just sent out a terrible message, and it seemed really timid and unlike Joe Root, actually, as well.
Now, Pushkar came up with a great stat I can see on the chat. He says the first time we've had three Simons, even in tests, there have only been a maximum of two Simons playing in a match, which is a great stat. So three Simons on the Virtual Cricket Club, and now a Dinesh. Now a Dinesh Kartik as well, which is great news.
Wow, brilliant.
Dinesh has joined us as well, which is, yeah, fantastic. Yeah,
Dinesh, thank you very much. Where is
No, it? It's my absolute pleasure to join the three Simons. Thank you so much.
Three Simons. You don't have any problems identifying us. You'll have to call us Simon 1, Simon 2, and Simon 3. Well, I'm Yolza. Yeah. So you call me Yolza, okay? Yeah. And the other two can be Dooley and Sman.
Yeah. If DK can't recognise my accent, then there's an issue mixed up between you guys. If he can't recognise my accent, I'm sure DK will be fine with it. Evening, buddy.
How are you doing? All good?
Yeah, great. Thank you, mate.
The fab.
What room are you in, buddy? What room are you in? Well, point it out. Tell me where you are.
To be honest, I haven't come to the hotel yet. I'm in a different hotel. I'm in Harbour Hotel.
Okay.
Oh, you're in the Harbour Hotel. That's rather nice,
yes,
actually.
Yes.
Yeah.
I've come from a place called Belgrade. So I've been
Tell us about your travels then. You've been in Belgrade. So tell us all about that.
Oh, so basically, from India, basically, we got red listed. So, you know, we weren't able to go anywhere else. I mean, literally, I wasn't able to go from Southampton to London. It was that bad. I couldn't just move from one place to another within Chennai. So obviously, when they're stopping us to move within the country, it makes it that much more harder for other countries to accept us. So then, first we had planned to go through Bahrain. But then, we had booked the tickets, it got approved, and then Bahrain closed doors on us. Then they said the other option is to go through Mexico. I said Mexico is a bit far-fetched. I thought it's the other way around the world. Nobody goes from India to Mexico to come back to UK. Well, anyway, that happened, but that didn't come through as well. Mexico. I mean, all the countries closing doors on us was fine, but when Bangladesh did it to us, it hurt me personally. I don't know why. But after that, we went to Serbia. Interestingly, that's one of the places having an Indian passport, you don't need a visa to get there. And the better part about that country is the fact that there's no quarantine. So it was me. And then we went there and we were there about Sunny Bhai and me were there about 10 days. And it was a good time. Lots of stories all the way from 1955 to 2021. So I caught up on a lot.
You've got the right man to be with. I mean, he wouldn't run out of stories, would he? You could be with him for a year and he'd have a story for every day.
Yeah, you just walk into his room, he has a story. He's fabulous. I mean, it's just amazing how he remembers all. Absolutely the opposite of me. One of the reasons why I'm dreading going into this country is, A, I'm very bad with names, and my memory is like a goldfish. So, I think I'm in the wrong profession. But anyway, you'll know in a week's time.
Is it your first? So, obviously, you did some work on Sky during the India series. Well, actually, you did some work on Sky during the Sri Lanka series, I think, didn't you, as well? No, the India series. My memory's playing up.
Yeah, no.
Sri Lanka series. Interestingly, I will be doing work when they come to England this time around. But then I did England versus India. I did the T20s and ODIs. But that's a lot different. I did punditry so that, they were nice to me. They would just ask me a few questions before and a couple of questions later. And I'm done. My job is done. I'm just sitting and watching the match otherwise. Now I got to do ball by ball. And that's something that Dooley is absolutely amazing. And Dooley, you did a fab job in the England with New Zealand series. I loved it. Thoroughly loved it.
Thanks, mate. Thank you. And we'll look after you as well, buddy. We'll be kind to you. Don't worry about
please,
it. You'll be fine.
I'll buy you guys a nice bottle of wine after it finishes. It'll be nice to me at this point of time. I don't think I'll be nervous even to play the sport.
What's your sort of commentary philosophy, Simon? How do you approach your TV commentary? I mean, you're a player, test match player. And now this is a very different job, isn't it? It's completely different. Okay, you were a former cricketer, but this is about broadcasting.
Yeah, and I think that the best thing I did, if I can go right back, when I finished playing in 2000, I got completely away from cricket. So I didn't have anything to do with the game for 8 years. I had a liquor shop and I worked on a rock music station doing the sports news for 7.5 years and absolutely loved it. So it was music, it was alcohol, sales, and that was what I did. And then I got my first gig in New Zealand in radio and then moved from there to Sky TV. And so it's been an amazing journey. I continue to tell people I have a lifestyle that pays. I don't really have a job. That's one thing. I get to travel the world and talk about something I once did, kind of okay, a long time ago. So philosophy is, I mean, one of my big things, I will never say anything on television that I wouldn't say to a player's face. So I have no problem saying that I don't agree with things, or I don't like the way he's doing that, or I don't like this about that player. But I would never say anything on TV that I wouldn't say to their face. If they wanted to have a chat to me about it, more than happy to have a chat to me about it. And, you know, we don't have to agree. And the other, it's just an opinion. You know, we've all got them. We're all allowed to have them. We're not ever having to go at anyone personally. It is just about the ability to play cricket. Enjoy it, always enjoy it. And don't, I mean, from one of the great things Richie Beno said was, you know, if you haven't got anything good to say, or you haven't got anything to say, just leave the microphone down. Don't worry about it. You don't have to call, particularly test match cricket. And so one thing that's probably slightly different in India is you're almost getting told all the time, pick the mic up, say something. Whereas, you know, some places around the world, and I find England quite nice with that, where you can leave the microphone sitting there for 5, 6, 7 balls and not say anything. And it's actually okay.
Dude, just a second before you all come, just, you know, this got nothing to do with cream. Is it hard to sell alcohol in New Zealand?
No. We're a thirsty bunch, DK.
I assume that selling alcohol in most parts of the world is probably the easiest job going around.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, for you, DK, is it tricky because you're still playing, so you have to be mindful of, because I mean, I remember, you know, commentating and people coming up to me who I used to play with or played with recently saying to me, why did you say that about me? I thought you were my mate, you know, and it was only a kind of observation. But is that something that you have to be conscious of?
I think most players are conscious of it, but I'm not, because for two reasons. A, you know, I like to be honest and forthright about my views. You know, they pay me money to do it. You know, the whole world is watching. They want an opinion from me. I think if they wanted me to just sit on the fence, they wouldn't have called me. I think they want an opinion from me. Good or bad is okay, just like Dooley said. I think it's an opinion at the end of the day. If the player gets swayed by it, then I think I've played the sport long enough to know you shouldn't be taking those things seriously. And if they do, you know, I genuinely believe I have a very, very healthy relationship with most of the players. They could easily pick up the phone and, you know, say, you know, why did you say that? So, you know, I'm ready for that. If I wasn't ready for that, I shouldn't have done this job. So I made peace with that. I'm not going to make more friends, but, you know, the odd enemy here and there, I guess I got to live with it.
The worst thing about Yoza, the worst thing is that 9 times out of 10, they get half the story. So what happens most on most occasions, I find, is that the player has had a message from a family member or a friend who's listened to a very small part of commentary and picked up one or two things and has not blown out of proportion, but hasn't listened to the whole thing in context. And that's the first thing I'll say to any player is go back, listen to the whole thing in context. And if you still disagree or if you still want to have a chat about it, then let's have a chat. But that's the one thing I find. Normally it's a mum or a dad or a brother or a sister or a wife, girlfriend, who's saying, oh, you should have heard what Dooley said about you today. And so that's one of the big things. Look, you can say what you like, but just go away and have a listen to the whole thing. And if you still disagree or want to have a chat, then that's all good.
So are you nervous, Dinesh, you know, coming in? I mean, it's a big match tomorrow. I mean, you're so accomplished on the field. You know, you're playing in the IPL fairly recently. You played for India, and, you know, which brings its own pressure. What about being in the commentary box on for the World Test Championship final, the biggest match in Test history, according to Ravi? I think I heard Ravi say possibly the biggest match in the history of Test cricket.
Yeah, there's a restaurant in Chicago. It's called Alinea. Apparently, there's no light in it. You just need to go and you just savor the food needed. It's a bit like a blind man eating food just from the taste. I'm a bit blind right now. I don't know what it is to do commentary. I don't know what it is to sit there with Dooley. I don't know what it is. How is it backstage? I know nothing. I'm just completely blind right now when it comes to this profession. I'm just walking into it. Probably the biggest test match that's ever played. Arguably the biggest test match that's ever played. But one thing, I can promise to give you an insight into each and every player from both teams, because I'm playing with them literally up to the day they played this test match. So on most cases, I think I would be able to give a pretty close insight into what they would be thinking at that point of time, be it batting, bowling, keeping, fielding,
that's
whatever.
That's exactly what you're, that's what you're there for.
Yep.
And that's absolutely brilliant. Also, you've been captain as well, captaining the KKR and so on. So, you know, that's a really valuable input as well, what captains are going to be thinking, how they deal with different individual players. And I'll just say one thing. I mean, I was still playing when I started commentary, and I thought I'd get a sort of a nice, easy day on the BBC and sort of watch how the masters of the commentary did it and I'd get a chance sort of mid-afternoon. And when I turned up, they said to me, you're in vision at the top of the show with Richie Benno. And that was it. I mean, I literally had nothing, no chance to sort of get used to it or anything. I think it's best just to go in at the deep end, have a go, and I'm sure you'll be fine.
And Julie, you're listening to him, but don't listen too carefully. It's okay. I can be eased into it as well. That's an option as well.
have you got some nice shirts with you, by the way? Because your shirts were very impressive during the India series.
You know, I do think it just happened by absolute mistake that it happened, because I think I set the bar so high now, it's everything downhill from here. I don't have any great shirts. I know I'm just here to speak about the sport. I know a little bit about the sport. Interestingly, I play the sport as of now. Shirts are not my strength. Yes, maybe I have a good choice. Maybe I just got lucky. Whatever it is, please don't expect nice shirts from me. Rather,
well, at least you could give me the name of your tailor anyway.
Well, we've been told what we have to wear, Yozza.
We've
been given an option.
I know, you've got a uniform, so, haven't you?
Yeah,
for the first,
it's all a bit bland, isn't it, DK? Grey and white.
You know, you have to see this. Are you guys... okay, you know, I have to show you this photo they sent me. So there are three of us living in this hotel right now. So it's Cyril Gavaskar to my right, Ian Bishop to my left. That's how the placement is, all right? So they sent me the suit a couple of days ago, okay? And this is how I looked. This is the screen. This is how I look. They sent me Bishop, and this is what I'll be wearing. So...
Hold it up again.
One second.
And talk at the same time.
If my wife had seen this when she just about married me, she'd have been very, very unhappy with that person. But yeah, I think
Did you send them the wrong measurements?
Yeah, I think they sent me a mix of Bishi's and Gavaskar's clothes. You know, it's short from one side, it's long from the other. It's an absolute mess, to say the least.
I can't wait to see you in vision at the toss then. That would be brilliant.
I tell you what, they'll throw me out of the ground for being a beggar if I wear that.
to be serious for a moment, because I know you haven't got long, DK. We talked a bit about, before you joined, about New Zealand and their preparation and their very impressive squad. And I actually said, I think that they're favourites, because they've been here and they've been playing very good cricket, and they all know their games and all that. What about India? How do you feel? I know you haven't been here long, but do you feel their preparation has been adequate? And have you spoken to any of them about that?
Look, I think... you know, anywhere else in the world, I would have given India an upper hand. But right now, I'd give India versus New Zealand, if the odds 51-49 to New Zealand, and only because they played those two test matches, albeit it not being a very strong English side, they've got a little insight into what it feels like to be playing in England at the moment. But hey, come on now. Every year for the last 5 years, India has been coming up. It's not going to be any different. You know, with the 2019, they came for the World Cup. 2018, we played England in a full series. 2017, the Champions Trophy. 2016, something else. They come to England at every June and July for the summer, so that the whole, you know, the cricketing world is healthy by us doing that. And, you know, you always have a lot of people watching sport and watching cricket in England. So getting acclimatized is one thing. And also, you have to understand, this is not a young side like the one that India is sending to Sri Lanka. We have got guys who have played at least bare minimum 30-35 tests. Everybody in that playing 11 that's going to walk out on the other day is going to have played 30-35 test matches. So they have experience, you know. If just by playing two matches before, I mean, against England is going to make all the difference, I don't believe so. It's a big game. It's going to be rain curtailed quite a bit. But every time these guys walk out, it'll be a, you know, fresh scenario. The wicket will play a little differently, depending on the weather. We all know how England is. If the sun comes out, it's beautiful to bat. If the clouds cover, Dooley will have a good time bowling there. That's how it always works itself. So if I was an Indian cricketer, you know, do I feel underprepared? No. I mean, I would just say we've been coming here every time. You've had a few net sessions. They've had an intra-squad match. There has been preparation. If you compare it to New Zealand, maybe a touch less. But hey, come on. It's a World Test Championship final. It's not an excuse you can hide under.
Is it actually now the case? I mean, this is something else we were talking about just before. Is it something else that now that players, modern players, and you know, you're one, don't actually need match practice anymore? You know, they just need their bit of preparation, and it might be middle practice, it might be nets. You know, is the game changing so that actually the modern player doesn't need warm-up games?
I think the modern player is a very broad term. You know, I was just joking the other day with one of the cricketers in the Indian team saying that just watch out in the night. I feel that Cheteshwar Pujara is slightly under the covers, sleeping in the ground, and the other side is Arash. These are two cricket nerds, and they'd probably, from their balconies, they can look into the ground. I wouldn't be surprised if they jump in and just go and sleep under the covers. That's how much they love the sport. And these two guys, one bats a lot, the other one bowls a lot. And on the other side, there's a person like Virat Kohli. He barely bats, you know. He's somebody who's a touch and feel player. So he goes into a net session, bats 15, 20 minutes. He feels good. He walks out. He doesn't feel good. He'll bat till he feels good. So, you know, when they come into a country, like, you know, they've come in 10 days ago. At the start of the 10 days, they must have batted 1 hour, 1.5 hours and all of that. But as the game is coming closer, I think they'll reduce the time they bat. So, you know, it'll be far more into getting into the zone. At the end of the day, when you play 100, 120 test matches or whatever these guys have played over a period of time, it's not that extra batting. It's like studying for an exam just the day before. All the preparation is done much before that. You just revise what you've studied when you get closer to the exam. It's very similar to playing the sport. You just make sure you're very thorough with what you want. And the most important thing is the mental space you are in. It's not how you play in the nets. It doesn't matter at all. That's going to help you get into a mental space going into the game. But once you step in, it's about how you handle the pressure and how you handle all the questions that's thrown by the New Zealand bowlers.
Ravi Shastri, the India coach, was quoted the other day as saying, you know, this is possibly one of the biggest test matches in history. I mean, do you sense, I don't know how you necessarily gauge that, you know, coming from India, but do you sense the excitement there and the focus there on this match? I mean, do you think people feel that? And the same question to Simon, actually, as well. Do you think people sense that in New Zealand as well?
Julie, why did you start?
I think they do. So many messages coming through about how New Zealand played against England. So many people that I know, there's a Seddon Cricket Club, which is part of Northern Districts Cricket, sort of just the old folks, a bit like myself, who've got a great cricket club going. They've rented a bar on Friday night, and they are going to be there the whole night watching the game. And you know, there's so much excitement in and around this, and it's sort of that David and Goliath type situation, is it? Where New Zealand have New Zealand have 5 million people taking on India of 1 and a bit billion people, the global superpower of cricket against the, I think, so many people's second team. I think most Indians even like New Zealand as their second team, but we are a very, very good side now. You know, as I said it earlier, DK, I think this New Zealand side is as good a team and squad as we have ever been able to put together in the history of New Zealand cricket. So is it our time? Who knows? We've still got to play the best cricket on the field at the time, but there are so many people in New Zealand that are going to be up and up all night. And, you know, whether it be tea or whatever, coffee or whatever it might be to keep them going, they will be watching.
From my side, to be honest, you know, if I have to ask me personally, I don't believe this is the biggest game, biggest test match that's ever played. You ask any Englishman, including both of you, and come December, there'll be an Ashes series starting, and you all feel that is the biggest one that's ever going to happen. So, you know, this biggest series, there's a lot of hype. There's obviously, you know, television's in play, there's social media world. So, you know, there's generally a bit of hype in India as well. There's a lot of takers. What this test match championship has done to India is, to a large extent, to a small extent, it was dying a little bit, test cricket, because, you know, with the IPL and, you know, the white ball cricket, people fancy it, their attention spans are so small that they don't have time for test cricket. But now that ICC has brought a certain sense of perspective into this, I think people have started watching it, especially, you know, post the Australian series. Before that, we really didn't have a chance. But once we won that Australian series, like, wow, hey, there's something around the corner here if you beat England. And then, you know, all the hype and hoopla started happening, you know, and then we lost the first test against England. Then that made our chances slightly dodgy. But then, you know, India being India, they just found ways. They came back, and sorry to say this, but they thumped England at the back of that, you know, that loss there. And they found their way right royally into this World Test Championship final. And now, if at all there is a mega event and, you know, something of this stature, as much as you don't like it, a lot of times it's good to have India there because, you know, obviously the fan following and, you know, everybody's watching and, you know, it's big. It's in mega, it's grand, however you want to put it. So it's good to have in India there. And it's the first time this tournament happened. If you remember the World T20 that happened, even though, you know, all the countries play in the World Cup, but when India came to the final and Pakistan came in, it was just a blockbuster of different sorts. And the game just took off. And I genuinely hope that, you know, this kind of revives. It's like, this is like a bit of CPR given to a dying person. This is what test cricket needs. In England, there's a lot of attention because of the Ashes, but, you know, in a lot of other parts of the world, it was just losing its perspective and, you know, people weren't interested as much as before. So it's just ingested some life into them. So it's good to see. still a long, long, long way to go with a lot of the other nations. But for now, I think this test match, it's fair for everyone to say that the two best teams that have played proper cricket in the last 2 years, if not 5 years, are playing this tournament. I mean, just playing this game. I just wish it was a slightly longer match in the sense that a best of three or something like that. Not for anything else, but just the fact that the weather can play a part in the game. But, you know, that's the beauty of the sport. I just hope there's a proper winner there and we get a great game. I really don't mind a hard-fought draw. I think it'll be very symbolic of what Test cricket is all about.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, interesting. I think it does match up as one of the biggest Test matches of all time. I mean, you know, England-Australia is a sort of little family feud, really, in terms of the rest of the world. You know, we all love it, but, you know, nobody else really cares about it particularly. I know the Kiwis, actually, I used to love watching Australia getting thumped by West Indies in New Zealand, because, of course, the Kiwis, I hate the Aussies. But I think the way it's been, although the points system and everything's been a little bit confusing, the fact that we have actually got, as you say, Dinesh, the two best teams probably from the last couple of years playing off in a one-off final, it will just give Test cricket that bit more lift, which it's needed around the world and draw some attention to it, because it is a wonderful format of the game. And we need every country to and every star player to really value it. And so hopefully this will be a good showpiece.
It's also worth saying as well that it is in the calendar until 2031. So we will be having some more Test championships. It is the first of a few. It's not just a one-off. It was a sort of experiment, but it's going to continue.
Just a brief interruption in the conversation to tell you about LB Insurance's latest initiative. Girls cricket was hit particularly hard by the pandemic, with access really limited, so a major focus for Funds for Runs is on the women and girls game. The recipient of LV General Insurance and the ECB's £1 million Funds for Runs community initiative we're profiling today is aiming to help combat that. Interest in cricket continues to go from strength to strength among young girls in this country, and Humbleton Cricket Club in Yorkshire are using their funding to deliver All-Stars and Dynamos sessions with other local clubs, including South Holderness and Patrington. More than 100 children have attended these sessions in the past, and there'll be a major focus on attracting enough girls from local schools to create a full women's hub, with the hope of building up enough numbers to separate into three women and girls clubs in the coming years. That's a really brilliant initiative from LV Insurance, and hope it gets a lot of support.
Is it time, Yoz, do you think, for some members?
Yeah, let's have a few questions. Yeah,
members'
yeah,
questions?
Yeah, definitely.
I don't know whether Noughts can bring one or two in. Who have we got first up tonight?
Mushka, all the way from Bangalore.
Mushka, who's in Bangalore. Are you going to be staying up all night to watch Pushkar? Not all night. Actually, no. I'm thinking New Zealand. Sorry, Dool, you're saying people staying up all night, but the hours probably fall quite nicely for India, don't they? Go in sort of late evening.
Yeah, but we'll sleep at around 3 a.m. in the morning, something around 3 a.m.
That's all right for you. You stay up for our club till 3 a.m. in the morning, don't you?
Yeah. Hi, Simon. Hi, DK.
Yeah, first of all, lovely hairstyle. I really like
it. Yeah. Grow fantastic.
So much never come.
I think for those of us who can't grow it anymore, mate, that's really good.
Yeah. What's your question, Pushkar?
Yeah, so my question is for DK. So it's related to mostly the India England series. So now with the so many reserve fast bowlers, do you think that India should go with a four fast bowler, or should it be a Jadeja, Ashwin, and a three seamers? And what is your take on the India England series? Do India has a chance to win this series?
So you're asking this question for the India-England series, the 11 and all of that?
Yeah, India-England series.
Okay, fabulous. Every time we come to England, one thing is said. This is the best chance for India to beat them. But I think we're really living it this time. Just after the way they haven't played some good test cricket in the last, couple of months or couple of series that they've played. So they'll be under a lot of pressure and they'll be heading to the Ashes as well. So they'll have one eye there. They'll obviously be under a little bit of pressure. So this gives us a great opportunity for us to do well against them. This is in a team perspective. In terms of the bowling attack, see, I think this is the most well-rounded bowling attack we've had in a long, long time. We have a Jadeja, we have an Ashwin, we have the other fast bowlers who are solid. I mean, you see, the only comp actually for the game that's going to happen in a couple of days, the only doubt I have is whether Siraj will play or Ishant will play. I don't have a doubt with the rest of the guys who are going to play. And that's a great sign of Indian cricket, because the quality of fast bowlers produced is just phenomenal. I think, you know, all of them can be a match winner on a given day. It's very healthy signs for Indian cricket. And when it comes to the India-England series, it's very early for me to predict the playing 11. So many things happen. We have another 6 weeks post the Test Championship final for the Test match to start. The first thing is hopefully everybody is fit. And I do think there will be plenty of changes through that series when it comes to bowling attacks, because we're playing a five-match series. We are not used to playing five-match series as a team. It's a very rare one. I don't remember the last time we played a five-match series. So this is very good that this is happening right now. The maximum we have gone to is four. So the boys are used to that. But as a fast bowler, to keep running in for five test matches on the go is not easy. So, you know, it's going to be
I think he also wanted to know whether you would play the three seamers and two spinners in this in this test match final as well.
Yeah.
100%. You know, you're 100%. See, Southampton is a wicket that aids a bit of medium pace at the start. But if the game goes on to the fourth and fifth day, it generally turns. One of those venues in England which definitely aids spin. So if I was... If I'm the captain, I would definitely play Jadeja and Ashwin. And also the best part about them is both of them can give you something with the bat. They are no mugs with the bat. So, you know, just the fact that they can add that dimension to our Indian team is something that is fabulous. So I will have both of them. We have three gun medium pacers. So giving five bowlers an opportunity to pick up 10 New Zealand wickets, I think will give us the best chance of winning this test match.
Right.
Great answer.
Yeah. Thanks very much for the question. Pushka.
Yeah. Who's next?
Jacob. Go for it, Jacob.
Hello there, Simons. Well, trio Simons and DK. Great to be here and listen to you. So the question, I've got a question for both, actually, DK and Simon. So DK, I just wanted a little bit of insight about the Indian leadership, really. Because obviously you got Virat and Ravi Shastri, very, very much extroverts. You know, and very kind of, you know, they show very full of expressions and whatnot. And then you have Rahane, you know, a little bit more introverted, you know, and obviously he led the team just equally as well. It seemed like the whole team had great amounts of respect for him, just as much as VK. So I just wanted to know a little bit of insight into, you know, how that's played out in a test match, and you know, how that complements each other, if I'm guessing it does. And then my question to Simon would be, you know, New Zealand has been a great test team for a number of years, and I still find it disrespectful that New Zealand played two test series. And New Zealand is at least a 3-4 test series team, you know. And I mean, I don't know if it's a media thing there, you know, maybe it doesn't sell to the TV that well. I do not know, but it'd just be interesting to get a bit of insight about that as well. So, yeah, bit long winded.
It's all right, mate. It's all right. I'll take the first one, and then DK can have a think about the difference between Ajinkya and Virat. Look, part of it is commercial. I will say the New Zealand side of things, and very few people. We're getting better at attending test matches, but they just don't make New Zealand cricket any money. But New Zealand cricket tend to lose money playing test matches, unless it is probably India, Australia, England. And the England series, the last one where the Barmy Army or the fans couldn't travel or you know, aren't able to travel, if that happens, means it's a loss. So those are the sort of broad answers around New Zealand cricket's reasons for playing a lot of two test series and a lot of 2020 and one day international cricket. I'm not entirely in agreement with it, but unfortunately for New Zealand cricket to prosper and to make money, they kind of have to do that. We have played the odd three test series against the likes of Australia and England. We probably should be playing more against India, but at this stage, the two test series are more relevant, I think, from a New Zealand cricket point of view. If they can squeeze two tests and then some 2020s and ODIs in, they make more money out of it.
Yes, Virat Kohli and Ajinkya Rahane. They're like fire and ice, you know. One guy is right in your face, just saying the most beautiful expletives going around, and the other guy is as cool as a cucumber. You know, And that's what helps the Indian team as well. You know, they have a shoulder to lean on when they're a little bit of trouble. They go to Rahane, they like that. And when, you know, when they really want somebody to fire them up, there's no better captain than Virat Kohli. He's going to give a kick up your backside and make sure you're going to deliver every time you're on the field. So it's good to have those two guys. And among them, they have a lot of respect for each other. I think Virat Kohli really likes Rahane as a vice captain because, you know, he's got a very cool, calm customer in him and somebody who under pressure stands up almost every time. So it's great to have a, vice captain Rahane, and the way he goes about things, very quiet about it, and you know, a typical shy guy who doesn't have much to say, but whenever he says something to, whenever he wants to say something to Virat, he's got a lot of access and he's got a lot of respect from Virat's side. And that's one of the ways that, you know, we've done well in Test cricket. Virat always has a lot of trust in him and knows that, you know, when the moment comes, Ajinkya will come and say something that that'll be of immense value to the team.
That sounds like mum and dad almost, doesn't it? The dad is the sort of the Virat, the kind of slightly aggressive one. And then the mum's the softer, caring one who comes in when some soothing needs to be done. Or, of course, you might have the father being the soft one and the mum being the hard one. That's certainly the case in my family.
In my family too, Simon, if it helps.
that's to me, that's the difference, though. And you know, they talk about it a lot. And you mentioned the All Blacks earlier, Yoza. They talk about leaders and captains. Virat Kohli is a leader. He is first one out of the trenches. He is up for the fight. He wears his heart on his sleeve. You know, that's him. That's what he does. He says, I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it with all the vim and vigor that I can. And you want to follow me, come with me and we'll get in the fight. And then you've got a Rahane who is a captain, a bit like Kane Williamson, who's quiet, does his talking when he needs to, and just sort of, they both have enormous respect, but I look at that and I think, you know, one guy is an absolute leader, the other guy is a captain, and that's kind of that complements each other pretty well, I think.
Who's the Kohli character in the New Zealand side?
Oh, we just don't have them anymore. There's a huge sort of respect around the world for how New Zealand play their cricket, and I just look at it and I think, well, I'm not saying guys don't get angry. Because there are guys on that side that can get angry and can get fired up. Tim Southee, probably one. Kyle Jamieson, he's got every you know, ability to get fired up. Neil Wagner, on the field, off the field, just the nicest bloke in the world. But, you know, they're competitive and they'll be in your face when they need to be. But it just doesn't, we just don't have that character at the moment, I don't think, that is always a bit like that.
Great. Annie's here. Good evening, Annie.
Hello. Hello. Hello, Simons.
Hey, Annie, how are you?
Well, good. Two apologies. One, that I'm trying to do two in meetings at the same time. So I'm not really with the... So if I ask a question that's already been asked or discussed, I apologise. And the other is that I'm sorry, I'm not called Simon. Obviously, it's the thing to be called. So... Simon, I've got a question for you. Do you think that the rise in form in Test cricket in New Zealand has anything to do with their obvious commitment and interest in the first class game, as seen by the number of New Zealanders that are part of the English county scene? And my other little bit is, can we keep Devon Conway at Somerset, please?
I'll answer the second question first, no. And the first question second. New Zealand made a conscious effort to change things around about 2008, 2009, make our first class surfaces flatter and better for batting, which then develops good batsmen, good techniques, but it also means that bowlers have to bowl fast or swing the ball and spinners have to turn it. And that has led to double hundreds, hundreds, triple hundreds in first class cricket, and it's led to guys wanting to either bowl fast or swing the ball or turn the ball. So it has improved the first class cricket structure enormously, and that then has led on sort of down the track, 8, 9, 10 years, 11 years down the track, to quality players playing test match cricket. We would never dream of having guys averaging 40s, all of our top six averaging 40 or close to it in a test match prior to. So yeah, the first class scene has made an enormous difference to the way we are playing test match cricket. And yeah, we're getting benefits, aren't we? That, you know, we just talked about Matt Henry's great time at Kent. We've We've had so many guys over here. Williamson's been at Yorkshire. So many guys have been in and around the county scene in the last 4 or 5 years. So, yeah, it's made
Wagner,
a big difference.
Wagner's been at Essex, hasn't he?
Yes.
Well. Yeah, yep. I mean, most of your team really are playing county. At some stage. There's only a few that aren't. Or haven't.
Trent Bolt. Has Trent Bolt played for anybody? I don't think he has, has he?
I don't think so.
Yes. Oh, I've got, oh God, I haven't got my notes, but he has.
Has he?
Okay.
Okay. Interesting.
Oh, well, that's a good sign. Inventing that.
Great, thanks.
You better go back to your other meeting, Annie.
Yeah. Right. Is Dinesh able to stay with us, or does he have to go? I don't want to keep him going if he's
a couple of minutes more. Come on, we can answer a couple of questions. No hurry. It's not like
cool, great. Thanks.
Great, excellent. Rob, good evening.
Evening,
to you.
Gents.
Hello, Rob.
Hey, Dan. Question for you both. Who would be in your ultimate combined 11 from the squads that are there now?
How are you going, DK? How are you going with that? Go on.
How long have we got?
So my team, let me go with my team. So I'd go for Devin Conway, the way he's batting, and I'd definitely put Rohit Sharma there. It's probably one of my favorites. I'd bat Kane Williamson at 3. He's outstanding. I'd love to find a place for Pujara, but I think I'll go with Virat Kohli at 4.
At a push.
At 5, I'd put Pujara because I want to find him a place there. 6 will be BJ Watling for me. I think he's gone. I have a lot of time for him because I think those are the kind of guys I would love to see take up the sport, especially this format, Test cricket. You know, they're hardworking. They put in a lot of effort. It'd be very easy for me to tilt towards Rishabh Pant, but just for the effort that he's put in for so long, I'd go with the BJ Watling. Without a doubt, I'd go for Ravindra Jadeja. I'm a big fan of him. You know, he's gone. He's all round. He'll give you something with everything. I'd go with R. Ashwin again. I think he's the best spinner going around both the teams put together. So I think I'll go with R. Ashwin. Trent Bolt, Jasprit Bumrah, and the last, just for the effort that he puts in and the smile after that, I'll go for Neil Wagner.
Nice choice.
Very good. Nice.
Thanks,
good
DK.
I like it. I'm going to start at the bottom because the bowlers are the most important things, Rob. And I only want one left armer on my side, so I'm going to go with Trent Bolt at number 11. He loves to bat at number 11. Jasprit Bumrah at 10 and Tim Southee at 9. The two Indian spinners who I think are just absolute guns, and they both bat brilliantly. So Ashwin 8, Jadeja at 7, BJ Watling. I totally agree with DK, and I mean he's far more qualified than me to speak about it. But the service, the longevity, what he has done, averaging 37 total and over 40 since he's had the gloves on with the bat, has saved New Zealand time and time again.
And he's a really tidy keeper as well. He's a really tidy keeper.
Yeah, really tidy keeper. DK went Pujara, but I'm just going to have to go the New Zealand way and go Taylor, Kohli, Williamson, Tom Latham.
Okay.
Tom Latham and Rohit Sharma.
No Pant. I can't believe neither of you picked Pant.
Surely
Pant can play as a batter.
I feel the same.
There's a rage on the Simons.
Yeah, we love Pant. I mean, I don't know what he's like as a person. I don't know what he's like in the dressing room. But we absolutely love him.
Now that Yola says it, I think we can definitely put in Pant as a batter. He's probably one of the best batters going around. I just looked at two keepers and just said one out of that. But I really think he does. He qualifies as a batter.
You can get him in as a commentator, if you like, because that's all he does. He likes chatting all day. So have him in as a 12-man commentator in the dressing room, maybe. That would be a great addition. Right. Anyway, fantastic answers.
Yeah, those. Great.
What tremendous, tremendous team, both of them.
Yeah. Dinesh, you can stay for one more question. Here's Will. Good evening to you, Will.
Simon, hello, and Dinesh, hello. My two questions to you. My first question is for you, well, it's for both of you, actually. What was the best piece of advice you were given as a young cricketer, kind of growing up, and do you still use it now? And Simon, a question for you. Do you think that the current New Zealand side could be as strong as, say, the Australian side back in, like, the early 2000s when it had Ponting, Lara, Hayden, you know, all that people, McGrath? you know. So I don't know how you want to answer those questions.
DK, we'll let you go after you give your piece of advice. Eh? Yes. What was the greatest piece of advice you had?
I think it was told to me. I don't know who told it to me, but it's always remained with me. I've always been, you know, from the time I've started, I've always had some massive rocks thrown in there in the name of MS Dhoni. He just came and just bamboozled world cricket. Before, you know, just after MS Dhoni left, it was Rishabh Pant who's come in and, you know, taking the world cricket by absolute storm. So my point being, I was a wicket keeper as well. So it was a profession that coincided with these two people. So, you know, I was always going to be, I had to find different ways to play international cricket. Amidst all that, I ended up playing a few games and I was lucky. You know, I guess I have the blessings of a lot of people and got lucky. But most importantly, the one thing that I got as a piece of advice was learn to face your struggles with a smile. And I genuinely believe this because it is very important for a player like me, for a fringe player like me, even though it's great life advice, to be honest. I mean, it just sounds very, you know, very philosophical. It is true because, you know, you play for the country, especially if you play for India, you're just, you know, you're nothing less than a demigod there. You know, everybody's looking at you, giving you the best food, taking you in the best of cars, and you're just living a very luxurious 5-star, maybe a 7-star life, you know, with thousands of people turning up at the ground and millions of people giving you attention throughout. And then you know, you just go back, and as a big player like me, going back to domestic cricket is a norm. It's a normal thing. You go back, there are probably two dogs and one scorer there. But there's nobody else in the ground watching you bat, watching you keep. There's nobody. So when you go there, the motivation can be a massive issue. You know, you just feel like, you know, what am I doing here with my life? There's nothing, you know. Two days ago, I was with millions of people, and then I come back here and there's zero, literally nothing. That can really piss you off and, you know, really remove the juice out of the vegetable, as they say. But, you know, it just makes it really hard to play the sport then. But the moment you realize you need to face those struggles with a smile, you know, you look at it very differently and you realize that, you know, at the end of the day, there are far more people doing what I would do in domestic cricket than the ones playing international cricket for the country. So it's a privilege to play the sport in India. I think because I was able to play with that attitude, two things happened. A, I was able to find venues to play for the country. Sometimes I played as an opener, sometimes I played as a middle order, sometimes I played as a finisher. I was just a jack in the box. I just kept coming back with various things. Most importantly, if I'm sitting here today, you know, speaking to you all, it's because, you know, I was able to make a living out of my sport, you know. I think the game as a whole has been very kind to me. It's given me a lot more than I've given the game, in the sense that I've been blessed financially. You know, a lot of people know me. I've been, you know, famous come to me in small numbers. I'm very happy with life. It isn't one of those journeys where I got frustrated because Dhoni got thrown in and then I had no place to be. I just found ways to keep bouncing back. I was a bit like a bit like those ping pong balls that get thrown at the wall. I just kept coming back, you know, just found ways to play the sport. And I just enjoyed the whole process of playing it. But the most important thing, through adversity, you need to find a way to smile. And that's the advice I got. And I think I lived with that.
Great. Give us a smile then. Go on.
No, I'm waiting. Let Dooley finish the answer. I'm not that. It's okay. I'll wait.
Come on, Dinny. You're not going to smile. Come on. There we go.
That was a fantastically inspirational answer.
Yeah.
Brilliant. Very good.
I think you can, I mean, much similar to DK, you never forget where you come from and you know, never forget how hard it is as well. It's difficult. And that's something also I take into my commentary. Just remember how many great days you had out on the field. And there's not that many. I mean, you know, DK's had a few more than I did, but I mean, you can kind of count them. You can count them there, the great days. So it's hard, you know, it is hard work. And if you put that hard work in,
Simon, where would you put that on your bucket list?
Oh man.
It was
one of the craziest days. It was one of the craziest days. I was sidelined for the whole of that last bit. I went down with four overs to go to do the interviews. And then, you know, then I'm listening to Nasser, to Bish, Ian Bishop, and to Ian Smith for an hour and 15 minutes. You know, and I'm crouched down on the sideline watching this whole thing unfold. And it was just the most surreal, sort of unbelievable day. So, and those are the things that for me, you get to be a part of. And I get to be a part of that, much like what DK was saying, because, you know, I once played the game. I mean, he's been so privileged to play for a long period of time. I retired at 30, fractures and prolapsed discs and a full knee reconstruction. And I've now got a false knee and all those things. But I'll never take any of it back. I would never change a thing. What I did then and the hard work that I put in then has given me the life I have now. And I'm able to travel the world, talk a little bit of crap about something I did a long, long time ago. And, you know, and never forget how hard it was when you're talking about players, when you're talking about guys that are doing it on the field. never ever forget that it was difficult, and also where you've come from. You know, those people that help you on the way up, they're always going to be there, and as long as you remember that, I think you'll be fine.
Excellent. Listen, guys, I think you've done proud service to our club tonight. I think we should draw the curtain there, really, because you've answered all the questions and given lots of food for thought.
I will say, there is one other question, but I don't know if Dennis was going to stay or go. There's one other one.
On,
shall I bring it
right. on? Well, if this is going to end, yeah, I might as well finish it. Don't worry.
Okay, thank you.
See you, Dennis. See you, Simon. Thank you.
Cheers, Will.
Cheers, Will.
Thanks, buddy.
Good evening, Simons. Good evening.
Hi, Ian.
Is it possible to be strong simultaneously right now in both white and red ball cricket? And if you were Chris Silverwood, what approach would be you suggesting to enable England to improve their test record in the age of COVID?
Is this for me or Julie?
Both. You can both have a go.
Julie, go for it.
Yeah, look, I think it is possible. I think it's very possible to be strong in both white ball and red ball cricket. You need great resources, and I think England have enormously good resources. I worry about the county game. I worry about playing on little green seamers time and time again where 70-kilometre, 75-kilometre bowlers are cleaning up. And no disrespect to some that I have seen get 3, 4, 5, 6 wickets in the last 3 or 4 weeks, because that's what they're playing on, and that's all you can ever do. Is you know, do your job on the surfaces that are provided, but it's not conducive to producing top quality cricketers at the next level, I don't think. And that's why you're seeing guys shimmy across to off stump time and time again to try and protect that little nip backer that they get on these filthy green seamers at the start of the season. So technically, I think players are failing, and I think that's a huge issue from an England point of view. The bowling stocks are good. They're still very good bowlers in and around the county game. I was impressed, you know, with the on-field stuff from Ollie Robinson. Mark Wood's still there. Brody and Jimmy are still going strong. I think Jimmy's got probably one more Ashes left in him, or he'd love to. You get Archer back. Chris Wokes, I think, is a terrifically talented cricketer. Sam Curran. There's a lot of bowling options in and around Ollie Stone, who just played, in and around England. It's the batting that's the issue. And, you know, they talk about bringing Stokes and Butler back. Well, Stokes averages 37, Butler averages 34. It improves your side, but it's not in the 40s where it should be. You can be strong in both formats of the game. You have to make sure that, I think, the structures are in place that make sure you're playing some good county cricket in the middle of the year, not all at the start of the year. There needs to be county cricket being played in these times when it's just, when it's beautiful and it's flat and it's hard. And players can get 200s and 300s. And I think if England can see their way around playing some county cricket in July, June, July, August, rather than playing a lot of it at the start of the year and a token one or two at the back end of the year, I think they'll be better off.
All right. From my side, to be very honest with you, it's a very, very, very detailed answer where, you know, a lot of things happen right now. When you take English cricket, I think when they hit 2015 World Cup, I think they got, when they were chucked out of it, I think Andrew Strauss was made the CEO of ECB cricket, yeah. Director is the right word. So I think they sat down and made a conscious effort with a 4-year plan to win one white ball World Cup. I think, yes, they won one in 2014, I think, in West Indies, but I don't think they give it as much importance as they should. They wanted to win a 50-over World Cup. So they channelized all the energies towards making the best white ball team that they could do. So in the bargain, they sidelined red ball cricket to an extent because they were focusing on in county cricket, in the various formats that they were playing. A lot, the scouts were told to find out about the white ball cricketers. And that's when you got the Roys, the Hales, you know, the Butlers, everybody came through. And these guys played a certain brand of cricket, which is very new to England, which I think the whole country enjoyed it. And the results were there to see. They had a brilliant captain, Owen Morgan, who did a fabulous job for them and took them to the top of the ladder. Now, I think, again, they're focusing on the next thing, which is the next white ball World Cup that's going to come around the corner in a few months, the T20 World Cup. I think they're putting a lot of emphasis on that. So what this has done is they have rested various players at different points of time because they're trying to get the best team out there in October to play that World Cup. I think they're putting a lot of emphasis on that. Once that gets over, I think the cycle will start where they look to win the next Ashes. And I think that's one of the main reasons they're going to really struggle in this Ashes, because a lot of energy has been invested in the last 4 to 5 years in trying to make the best white ball cricket team out in that England has ever seen. And, you know, to be fair to them, they've done a fabulous job in winning the World Cup last time around. They had a good set of players, but these set of players are never going to be new at Test match. They're very different. I think, you know, Test match players are very different. You know, they're a very different breed. So now England again has to, you know, rework that route to find good Test players in that. Now, county cricket is always going to be a problem because you make money in the summer. So when you make money in the summer, you're going to put white ball cricket there. That makes the big money. Let's not mistake that. So it's a bit of a catch-22 situation. Where do you go now? So if you want to finish all your county games, then you've got to put it in the front and the back end of it. So then you don't play good quality cricket because gentle medium pacers who bowl at 70 and 75 will always come out and do far better than the ones bowling at 90 clicks. It's always going to be the case. So it's a case of what do you do now? Are you going to put money on Test cricket, which in turn is not going to give you money back? Or are you going to invest in the 100 and the white ball tournaments and win the white ball competitions and probably forego Test cricket a little bit, considering that the whole cricketing world is not emphasizing on Test cricket too much? In England, there is an Ashes, which you guys give a lot of importance for. And every Ashes, there's always going to be this headache. How good is England doing? If England does great, very nice, everybody's happy. If they do badly, start again. What can we do to beat Australia the next time we meet them? So this is a cycle that's going to go on. The answer to that is if you want to prioritize red ball cricket, then you bring it to the middle of it. But then ECB is not going to have the money. They're already in losses. Now, as I said, this is a massive, difficult one. It's a long, detailed answer. So, you know, we can keep going round and round. And that's the biggest issue ECB has. So they have said that, you know what, let's focus on white ball cricket. Let's try and win a few World Cups. We're bringing the 100 into play. We want some great players. We want some good players coming out of our own sheds. We got the Roys. We got the, you know, Butlers, Hales, Archers, Stokes. So they're going in that direction. When you go in that direction, definitely your four-day cricket is going to get hit a bit. You know, you're not going to find the Sibleys. You know, there are not going to be many Sibleys coming through. You'll find a lot more, you know, flamboyant stroke makers coming through. So obviously that's not going to help your red ball cricket. So, you know, that's my answer to this.
Thank you. And I think the point that Simon made earlier on about the change in the pitches and the preparation of the New Zealand players to play more consistently shows the length of time that you have to prepare. And preparing for the Ashes after the World Cup is no time at all.
Well, it actually helped our white ball cricket too. You know, it did our white ball cricket a lot of good. Our batsmen were able to just transfer from red ball to white ball cricket. We haven't had the resources to play both formats of the game. So we tend to have a crossover of at least 6-7 players in our red ball and white ball formats, particularly 50 over stuff. But I mean, it served us well at the last two World Cups with you know, with that strategy as well. So we haven't quite won one yet, but maybe one day.
One day. Well, you might win this World Test Championship final. That's going to be something that is a fillip for New Zealand cricket after all the emphasis put on the direction of travel. And guys, thank you very much. I'd just say one thing, actually. Dinesh, you have hand speed with the bat, but you have word speed even more. The torrents coming out of your mouth are absolutely fantastic and really compelling. So thank you very much for giving us your time. Who would be a cricket administrator? That is my question. I mean, imagine trying to manage all these issues. It's virtually impossible. It's much better being a commentator, isn't it?
Okay, well, that's it for this extended preview of the World Test Championship final, which starts, of course, on Friday, the 18th of June, with a potential sixth day added for Wednesday, the 23rd, if the weather does prove to be pretty dodgy. And certainly, as I say, the forecast isn't particularly good. Simon and I will be doing a review of every day's play, provided there actually is some play. And by the way, you can meet more stars of the game and ask them direct questions by joining our virtual cricket club, worldsbestcricketclub.com. We run a live event every Wednesday night with either a player or a former player, a well-known character from the game, and you can ask them direct questions. It's in aid of the Professional Cricketers Trust, the charity that supports players who've fallen on hard times, and it is a regular weekly event on a Wednesday night. So join our cricket community for more fun and insight. Go to worldsbestcricketclub.com. Sports Social Podcast Network.